Pets are an important and wonderful part of our life, certainly my life and probably yours as well. And we want them to be healthy, but we also want them to be happy as well. And when there are problems with their behavior, it can be real stressful for both us and for our animal companions. Certified Applied Animal Behaviors Patricia McConnell knows a whole lot about why animals do what they do and how we can encourage them to do things differently. She's also a dog trainer and the author of several books. Her latest is Love Has No Age Limit, Welcoming an Adopted Dog into Your Home. Tricia, always a pleasure. Thanks for coming
by.
Oh,
hi, Larry. Good to see you.
We have lots of things we can talk about. I know one of the things we were interested in talking about is positive reinforcement. People tend to lump that into a very, I think sometimes in a really simplistic category. If you give the pet a cookie for doing anything anytime, then they're going to do what you want.
Yeah, exactly. There's a belief out there that that it's just a simple process, and it's not rocket science, but the idea that you just give them a cookie for mm-hmm. anything, and then you're doing positive reinforcement, turns out not to be true. And the fun part is that learning how to use positive reinforcement correctly teaches you a lot about understanding your dog or your cat or your horse or your ferret better, because positive reinforcement is about increasing the frequency of a behavior. So okay. I have a quiz for you.
Okay.
Actually, we could sort of do a little Facebook quiz here.
Yeah.
So here's a quiz. I'm going to give you four scenarios.
Okay.
And I want them listed, categorized as either positive reinforcement or punishment.
Okay.
Okay. So here are four scenarios. One, your dog is barking and you say, "Be quiet."
Mm-hmm.
That's one. Two, you call your dog to come and he comes running to you and you pat him on the head and say, "Good boy, good boy." Three, your dog jumps up a lot and you don't want him to, so you push him away with your hands. Four, last one, your dog is really afraid of visitors, so you give him a piece of chicken every time a visitor comes. So, which is which?
Well, let's see. Number one would definitely not be a positive reinforcement, I don't think.
I put Larry on the spot here.
Number two.
Wait
a minute. I'm trying to remember.
People's brains may not be as good as yours. Which was number one, right? So let's just take them one at a time.
Right,
about the dog is barking and you say,
Be quiet. Yeah, then it sounds to the dog like you're just barking back at him.
Exactly. Larry and I have done this show together a whole lot. So that actually is positive reinforcement because you're adding something. That's a positive part. Doesn't mean good. It means adding something.
Okay. Yeah, you're looking at it that way. I was thinking negative, positive. Okay.
Yeah. It's a confusing use of terms because we think positive, good, negative, bad. And that's not what they mean. Positive means adding something to the system. I just learned Skinner didn't come up with those, by the way. I've always been blaming him for decades. It was somebody past B.F. Skinner who added those terms. Anyway, so if your dog is barking, bah, 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 and you say, "Be quiet," and you haven't taught him anything about what be quiet means or what to do when you say be quiet, dog basically perceives you as barking back. So barking is contagious. So your dog is barking, bah, 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 and you go, "Be quiet." You're most likely to increase his barking. So you've just used positive reinforcement.
Okay.
So let me give another example. Say you have a dog who you've asked to come for a very difficult recall. He's looking at a squirrel or there's food on the ground and you call him to come and you come, "Come, come, Rover, come." And he comes to you and you pat him on the head and you say, "Good boy." That can be punishment.
Patting on the head.
Yeah, because dogs,
they don't like the patting
on
the head.
Don't like the pat, 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 pat on the top of their heads. Doesn't feel good. So you're adding something, but you're decreasing the frequency of a behavior because they're going to be like, "I'm not coming next time Larry calls. Well, that was no fun." So here's one more for you. You have a dog who jumps up a lot, and so our response to that is very human. We all often tend to do it. You push the dog away with your hands.
Mm-hmm.
So let's analyze that. So your dog jumps up, you push away the dog with your hands. Are you adding or are you taking away? Positive or negative? Are you adding or taking
away? Well, you're
away?
Adding something.
Yeah. Yeah, you're doing, you're adding. You're adding. You're doing pushing. Something. You're adding something and you're pushing your dog away. And it turns out, it turns out that in a lot of cases, you're increasing the frequency of jumping up because dogs, in my belief, nobody's gotten into their brains and asked them, but in my belief, dogs behave as if when you push them away with your hands, they think you're playing. Because that's really all they do with their forepaws is they'll use them a lot. You know, they'll paw at you. Mm-hmm. They'll paw at you for attention. Yeah. They'll paw often in play to another dog. So I think a lot of times when you push your dog away, they're like, hee-hee-hee, dokie. And they'll come running back and they'll jump up again. So you think you're telling your dog not to jump up, and your dog thinks he wants me to jump up more. Exactly. So one of the keys to positive reinforcement is understanding exactly what the consequences are of your actions. And sometimes you know, and sometimes you don't, but you can always experiment. Do something, and then very carefully watch to see what your dog does. So a lot of us don't, you know. We just don't pay that much attention. So in dog training class, you'll see people pet their dog's head, pet, 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 for a recall, and the dog literally, I wish I had a video I could, like, put on your Facebook. So the dogs turn their head away, and they're like, ugh, I hated that. And then they'll walk away. And you know, good trainers will say, see what your dog just did? Your dog is telling you he didn't enjoy that. So positive reinforcement teaches you to pay attention to your animal, whether it's a dog or a horse or a ferret or a husband or a wife or a daughter or a son or a mom. Pay attention to the consequences, because that might actually inform you as to how you might tweak your behavior to get more of what you want.
Very interesting. I've got an interesting question for you from a listener who wonders, who has three cats and then has had three cats for a long time. They're older cats, and has added two new ones.
Oh, the blended cat family.
Yeah, two boys who are from the same litter. The litter was a cat, a mom that she found outside in her lawn.
Aww.
So she wound up with two of the kitties. But she put them all together, and the two new ones, the three old ones, go running and hide somewhere when the new ones are out.
Are out.
And
yeah.
How do you blend?
Yeah, the old blending cats. You know, cats just haven't read the dog book where you sniff each other's tails and you not always, but you often are like, yeah, okay, fine. And maybe there's a couple of weeks of adjustment, but cats haven't read that particular chapter. They're very slow to change, very conservative animals in a way. So the trick with cat introductions is to go slow. And Larry can tell his own story of this. People who've listened a lot know the story of Larry saying, we have a new cat. Renee rescued it from outside, and it's not getting along with the resident cat. And Trisha's like, how long has it been? Be patient, Larry. You need 6 months. So the trick is to keep them separate. First of all, keep them separate. Don't force anything. Give them their own room. Give them their own place with litter and food and toys. And give them lots of vertical space. Give them you know, cats are not sheep. They don't want to be on the ground. They want to be up. So give them lots of surfaces and substrates and places to be up at different levels vertically. And then you want to get them used to each other's scent. So you'll let the three resident cats into the communal living room, and then you'll put them back in their room, and then you'll let the two new cats into the communal living room, because then they can get used to each other's scent. So a lot of it is about scent. Even though cats don't have a great sense of smell, they're very scent-driven. It's very important to them. So you want to do that slowly. If you possibly can, then you set up a situation where they can see each other, but they can't get in physical contact. So it's not like there's a screen door between them. There's two screen doors between them and an empty space in between.
Okay.
Some houses make that really hard. Some make it easy. But you could always get, if you just have like two rooms, you could get a gate. And then you could put like a little X-Pen dog thing around the doorway to keep the cats back away from it.
Oh, sure.
So let them see each other. but not necessarily be in direct contact. And then gradually over time, you let them be in contact with each other. There's lots of other things you can do. You can try and change their internal physiology. You can get Feel Away or one of the pheromone products that helps, in some cases, helps to calm anxiety. So you might want to look at that direction too. But basically, overall, go slow.
Go slow.
It might take 6 months is the average.
Patricia McConnell, our guest today, certified applied animal behaviorist, talking about positive reinforcement and dealing with your favorite animals and pets. Larry Mueller here. Thanks for listening in. Marianne in Kashina has a question for you. Hi, Marianne.
Hello. Had a cat. She had three kittens. They were about 6 weeks old. We went on vacation for 2 weeks. Had someone coming in to check on them and feed the mom. But now we're back, and the cats are like wild cats. They don't want us
wild
to.
Things.
They won't let us go near them now. And the next question was, at what point do I get Mama fixed? We intentionally wanted to have the kitten, so they eat regular kitten food, but they also, I see them nursing, and when they're nursing, oh, I could pet them and do what I want. But as soon as they're away from Mama, and I pet Mama, and they come near me, but as soon as I reach out, they run away.
Okay.
What do I do?
What you need to do is to keep them in a relatively small area. It's funny you should ask this. I just went through this process. A feral cat came into my barn, had five kittens. They were absolutely, completely wild. She is literally a wild animal. I had her spayed at Friends of Feral after trapping her with a live trap. But she never settled down. She ended up leaving. And her kittens were incredibly shy and fearful. So I took them in and put them in a bathroom. Or a relatively small area. And basically, you start taming and socializing them. So first of all, don't just leave food for them. You can keep Mom in there, too. Don't just leave food for them. Food only comes with you. So you come in with food. In order to get to the food bowl, they have to get somewhere close to you. So start with the food a little bit away. You don't want them to starve to death. Start bringing it closer and closer to you. Eventually hold your hand with the palm parallel to the ground so that they have to walk under your hand and be actually touched by you to get to the food. You can also force things a little bit with kittens, not with adult cats. Do not do this with adult cats, but with kittens, just pick them up. I went through that. I would pick them up and they'd be like, hissing and spitting at me. Be careful. I use gloves in the beginning. Pick them up. Just hold them and just stroke and stroke and stroke. You can feed them. I hand fed them with chicken and they were like, oh, chicken. This
Pretty
is
good.
Not bad. A great way. And I learned this from some of the experts at Friends of Ferals, by the way. Dane County Friends of Ferals, very helpful organization. Also, the people at Dane County Humane Society are incredibly knowledgeable. So, play is a great way to get kittens closer and closer to you. So I bought a bunch of those fishing pole toys.
Mm-hmm.
You sit down in your little room. Again, it has to be a room where they can't get that far away from you. So you sit down in your little room. There's food. There's a litter box. But only food is only there when you're there. And then you just start playing with, use your fishing pole and just fish for a kitten. And then just sort of lure them in, bring them closer and closer to you. How old are the kittens now?
They're about 7, almost 8 weeks.
Okay, start right now. The socialization period of cats is a little earlier than dogs. So some people say, oh, it's too late. I don't think so. But you need to get going right away.
Perfect.
You have between now and about 11 weeks or so.
Okay.
Okay.
Good luck. Thank you for calling.
And, mine tamed up in a week or so. Yeah, and then I sent one to a new home, and with a lot of like, oh, it might take a while to, she's not totally tame yet. It was in an hour. She was like all over them. Yeah. So 2 weeks or so, you ought to be in good shape.
Patricia McConnell, our guest, certified applied animal behaviorist. I'm Larry Mueller. Judith Sears Poisson, our producer on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Glad to have you listening in here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here with my guest today, Patricia McConnell. We're talking about positive reinforcement in our pets, what it is, what it isn't, talking about various issues that you may be having with your favorite pet. And I hope you'll join in at 1-800-642-1234. go to my Facebook page. We'd love to see some photos. You got a nice pet photo? Send that in. And also you can post a question there at the Larry Mueller Show. And Patricia, I know you're be doing some kind of probably fun things, but also some good work for a lot of kind and wonderful people around Wisconsin.
Yeah, I think good and fun is a great summary. I'm starting a series of fundraisers for local humane societies. So I spoke last week at Humane Animal Welfare Society in Waukesha. We had a great time. We had a great turnout. We had a ball. Speaking at Cooley Region Humane Society, that's in La Crosse, September 19th. That's in the evening. These are all evening talks.
Mm-hmm.
Fox Valley in Appleton for their Humane Society, September 28th. Chicago, October 2nd, Milwaukee, Wisconsin Humane Society, Milwaukee, October 30th. And in November, just in case you're going, I'm going to be in San Antonio and Austin in Texas.
Wow.
So these are all evening talks. They're fundraisers for shelters. I've been doing a lot of that lately, and it's just really, really fun. It's a wonderful thing to do.
Yeah.
Shelters work so hard, and they deserve a lot of support, and it's great to be able to be in that position to do it.
Yeah, well, thank you so much for doing it. And the dates are on your website.
They are. Right. Yeah. Just Google my name. Just go to patriciamcconnell.com and click. Oh, we have a new website, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we have a new website. So click on events and you'll get a listing of all of the upcoming talks.
And actually, we have a link to it on our Facebook page, too. So if you're on my Facebook page right now, click there and you can go and take a look. We have Peter in Stoughton with a question for you, Patricia. Let's go there. Hi, Peter.
Good morning. We are a three-cat household. All of them are neutered males. Two of them are indoor-outdoor cats. When they're in the house, they get along fairly well. They aren't buddies, but this sort of behavior doesn't happen like it does outside. When they're outside, one of them bullies the other. He actually goes out and... let's go kick some butt. And I'm wondering, it's probably something that we can't control, but I'm wondering what dynamics might be occurring there.
That's really interesting. And I don't know exactly. What I do know is I've seen that both in cats and dogs sometimes.
Hmm.
Animals who get along in one environment but not another. I've seen it more often in dogs, and the way you're describing it, they're fine inside but not outside. Usually this is a reverse in cats, so you have sort of an interesting jazz riff on what's more typical. But I see quite a few dogs, especially, who are like fine inside, and even some of them are indeed buddies. You know, they get along great. Then they go outside and somebody just starts bullying somebody else. So exactly what's triggering it, it's hard to say. My guess is that you said they're not buddies, but they tolerate, you know, they get along fine.
Mm-hmm.
My guess is that there's something about the home environment that's inhibiting what is free to come out, you know, in an outdoor setting. You know, behavior can be either sort of facilitated and elicited, or it can be damped down. And I'm guessing it's more about, it's not that the outside brings something out that's not there. It's that the inside damps down something that is there. So, you know, one thing you might want to try when they're inside is, because that's when you have more control, you might even want to try a little bit of conditioning. You might want to try classical conditioning, for example, depends on how much you like to train. But tell me the cat's two names. What are their names?
The bully cat is Oliver, and the cat that gets picked on is Sunny.
Okay, so you might... They're both older males, you said?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So you might teach Sonny to look at Oliver and get a treat. So you say, Sonny, where's Oliver? And if Oliver, you might want to have somebody help you sort of move Oliver around so Sonny's head does turn. And then he gets a treat if he looks at the other cat. You do that over and over and over again. It's going to take hundreds of times. You can do like, you know, 10 times in one session. But you can sometimes change the emotional reaction one animal has for another. It's like, ooh, I love looking at Sunny. It makes me happy because every time I look at Sunny, I get a piece of wonderful food. So you might want to try that. I'd love for you to do some really careful observation of what goes on with them inside. just to sort of see what's going on. And also, if you were my client, I'd want to go outside and see if you could figure out what is the trigger. You know, is it just being outside, or is there something that happens? What do you do when you see it, and how bad is the bullying? Is it like a, you know, when you say bullying, what do you mean? Tell us more.
First of all, sometimes it happens almost immediately. Sonny will come out onto the balcony, and Oliver will be there, and Oliver will actively walk over and take whacks at him. And other times, well, we have a large yard with lots of plantings and such, and sometimes Oliver will see Sonny, and he'll actively hunt him down. And the fighting doesn't appear to be claws out type fighting, but it is quite vigorous and quite noisy.
And I'm sure the victim is not particularly enjoying it any.
No,
right?
He fears.
That's pretty hard to live with a big brother who's, you know, beats you up regularly. A couple of things you might do. One is let the victim cat out first. Rather than turning the tables. You know, you often want to do that if one animal's bullying another, is don't let them sort of establish on a temporal basis, this is my territory, how dare you enter into it.
Mm-hmm.
So you let the other cat out first. So they've been on territory. So that's something you can consider. Other thing, and I don't know how you feel about this, but, you know, there's nothing wrong with letting them out one at a time. Have you tried that?
The protesting of the cat that's forced to stay indoors is they get quite vociferous if they aren't allowed their run of the.
Okay. Well, and that's, in a way, that's a good sign.
Mm-hmm.
Because if victim cat or victim dog, whoever it is, just generalizing, is that traumatized by what's going on out there, then they wouldn't want out.
Yeah.
So that's, you know, that's sort of good. One thing you could do, though, so I would try letting whoever is the subordinate or victim cat out first. Another thing you could do, though, is trying to sweeten the pot for the cat staying inside. So you let say, Oliver outside first, and then what Sonny learns is that when I'm inside and Oliver's out, I get the really great food.
Hmm.
You know, during the day, we get the kibble. But, you know, when he's outside and I'm in... I get the canned food. I get the baby food chicken jar. You know?
All right.
So you could try that, too.
Thank you.
Yeah, good luck.
Good luck. Thank you very much for calling. Patricia McConnell, our guest today, Josh and Cable. Thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi, Larry. Love your show.
Thank you.
I've got a 3-year-old Boston Terrier, Dave, who has got bad separation anxiety.
Aw. So what happens? It's hard, isn't it? But tell us exactly what Dad loved Dave. A Boston Terrier, you said, named Dave? I love that.
Yeah.
So what does Dave do when you go or when he's alone?
He's almost 3, and I used to... I try and take him everywhere with me all the time, which is probably a bad thing, but now I have a different job I can't take him with, and he just... He'll tear things up a bit. He'll get into the garbage, which is stuff that he'd never think about doing when I'm around. And I think he's just trying to get back at me for leaving him.
You know, a lot of people think that, and I wish it was true, because in some ways it'd be fun if dogs sort of thought that way. But I don't think they do, actually. It's not like dogs have this sense of, like, you know, how come the dog down the street's owner has a trust fund and he doesn't have to go to work, but no, my owner leaves me. I think they're panicked, you know? It does sound like either just bad house habits, you know, which is also possible. And that is something that's important to try and figure out. Is he just being a bad boy and having, is he bored? Is he having a good time ripping things up? Or is he really doing it because he's stressed and anxious? Sometimes recording what's going on when you're gone can be really helpful. There's I don't have enough time to go through the whole procedure with you, but there are several booklets out there. I have one. I'll be home soon. There's some other authors that have some booklets. You can find my website, Amazon. Dogwise Books sells a lot. And it basically goes through about a 6-week program where you teach Dave. I love it. I love it when Daddy goes away. I got a rescue dog less than a year ago, and she'd never been alone. She'd been in a puppy mill. She'd never been alone. And now when I get up, this morning when I was getting ready to go, she was like, are you going? Are you going? Please, please. And I went through this procedure with her where basically I taught her that in very slow increments, that if I got my purse, she got some food. Then I'd sit down again. Mm. If I got up and got my purse and my keys, then she'd get some food. And then I'd put everything down again. And then this is over a period of weeks. And then I'd get up and get my purse and my jacket and my keys, and I'd walk out the door, and she'd get food, and I'd come right back again and take the food away. So she was like, well, don't come back. I'm not done with my Kong yet. So now she's like, go, go, please go. So you start with tiny little increments of just literally whatever the triggers are. Oh, no, Daddy's going. And you turn it into you're gone 5 minutes and then 10 and then a half an hour. And once you get to like a half an hour, it's not that hard to get to 3 hours and 5 hours and longer. But this is a cautionary note to a lot of people. Even if you're home all the time, life might change for you. Don't it's very easy to get sort of lulled into a situation where you take your dog with you all the time, and then all of a sudden you have a 2-year-old whatever, mm-hmm. 5-year-old dog who's never been alone. So if I've never been able to be home all day long, but if I was, I would still go out of my way just to have a new dog learn that fun things happen when mama leaves the house.
Mm-hmm. There you go. Thanks, Josh.
All right. Thank you very much.
Appreciate it. And Marty, in Lake Nabagamon, your turn. Hi, Marty.
Hi, good morning. How nice to hear Patricia McConnell again doing her great imitations of animals. I just
Thank
love
you,
it.
Marty.
here's the age-old question. I'm sorry to have to ask it. We adopted a dog from a shelter last year. We were told he was picked up on the mean streets of Tulsa, Oklahoma, and shipped up to a shelter in the Twin Cities. Who knows how old he was? He was maybe a year. He loves dogs. He loves kids. He loves people. He's generally great. My priority is to teach him to come all the time. So, of course, the first thing I did was I got your DVD, Lassie Come, and have used your tips. It's been about 80% of the time now he will come, but it's that 20%.
Yeah,
I just can't
I
seem
you.
To get over that. So can we finesse that? And just another very quick, he loves to run, just to, like in a circle. He's a runner, not runawayer, but a runner. And he gets such a head of steam built up that he's clunked into people. It's not. I shouldn't laugh, even though it.
No.
But it's hard not to.
Yes, it's. How do you get him to stop?
Yeah. Well, there's so many things here. One, aren't you great? Aren't you great to rescue this dog? So yay for you for bringing this little guy off the streets of Tulsa in. And how great that this dog loves people and kids and other dogs. I mean, yay, that's wonderful. And the Lassie Come DVD, I'm so glad that it was helpful for you. It's the beginning first stages. It's not all the way through to advanced have your dog come away from deer running away or something. It's getting your dog started. And 80%, that's not bad. That's a good start. So here's some things to do. One, do whatever you can do. It's very common, by the way, if you think he's about one, even if I had a one-year-old that I gotten as a puppy, I would have them in safe areas. I would have them off leash a lot as a puppy. Once they hit adolescence, and that could be 5 months, it could be 8 months, 10 months, depending on the breed and the dog. Once they hit adolescence, you want to go backwards. That dog's going to go back on a line in a lot of situations. So the first thing to do is sit down and write out. It really helps to write things out. Write out, when am I 110% sure that my dog will come when called if he's off leash? And you may say never right now, but do be very thoughtful about, is there a time when I'm absolutely guaranteed? And by the way, somebody criticized me once for saying 110%. They literally said, as a scientist, you should be aware that you can't be over 100%. So just in case that person is listening.
It's 100%.
I know. But you know what I meant. 110% as in like, I am positively sure. So make a list of those times, and then make a list of the times where you're pretty sure it won't work, and then make a list of the in-between times. He should be on a line all of the in-between and pretty sure he won't come when call times. And you're going to just work on doing those basic exercises in Lassie Come and use running as a reinforcement. As long as he's not nippy and as long as you don't let little children do it, you're going to call him to come safely. He's going to be 10 yards away, 15 yards away, enough that he's going to have to run to come to you. call him to come, and then run like heck the other way. Treat, and then great treats. And then one of the reinforcements is you guys get to run again together somewhere else. So it's very common for a one-year-old dog not to be, even owned by a professional trainer, not to be 100% consistent. You need to keep working on the basics. And the key is to prevent the escapes when they're not on a line, because there's nothing, you can't be, you're trying to compete with the environment. And if he runs away and runs around the woods or something, I don't know where you live, but say it's just a woods and he runs around the woods for 20 minutes, there's nothing more fun to a dog than that. He runs into a squirrel, he finds, fox poop to eat, and there's nothing that good, you can't compete with it. So prevent that as much as you possibly can. Do those things feel helpful given where you are with him right now?
I think so. Keeping him on a long line, we've never actually done that. We just decided to launch right into, he walks away 10 feet, get him to come with a treat.
Yeah.
So, mm-hmm.
Yeah, and that's good, but especially if he's an adolescent, they often start pushing the boundaries. Mm-hmm. So you want to prevent it from happening. Let him loose and make, fun chase games when he's free, when you can do it safely. There's another thing to do that is a great exercise. You can start with your dog is basically you go out in the wilds with him, whether it's not wild, it's your backyard or somewhere. But before you go out, you've hidden, some little pieces of sausage, nose level, in the bark of a tree. In like three different places. And so you two are out walking. He's sniffing the ground. You're do-do-do-do-do-do-do. And you go, Skipper, what's this? And you get his attention and you point out, there's sausage in that tree. And he's like, oh. And then you find the next place. And basically what you're teaching him, if he stays with you, the world is his oyster. Because you can find the best stuff in the world. Even if you can't smell, which is what I think dogs think we can't, even if you can't smell, you know where the sausage is. So that's a fun game to play, too.
That's great, because he's such a nose guy.
Yeah.
Nose
games are really great.
Wonderful.
Thank you.
Yeah, have fun.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Looking at my Facebook page here, we have a dog up a tree. Excuse me. Despite a bum leg from a shotgun wound, he's a relentless hunter and will dig any hole and climb any tree. That's Trigger, an English setter.
Maybe coonhound, it looks like.
Yeah.
Maybe a cross, yeah.
Rescued from a shelter in Indiana.
Holy moly.
He had recovered. When she got him, Bernie got him, he was recovering from heartworm and broken right rear leg. He often still runs on three legs, but real happy and affectionate. Afraid of loud noises, but not of guns when out on the hunt. I think that might be fun from being shot when the sound came from far away. What do you think?
Yeah, that's certainly possible that he learned if he's hunting with you and the sound is close, he's not in danger. But certainly dogs can get traumatized like people can. So if he was shot at, and there was a sound from far away, and then he was actually shot and in pain and horribly injured. That's very much a connection a dog could make, whether it's even conscious or not, There are a lot of dogs who are sound sensitive about other things, though, sort of ironically. There's some dogs who are fine with gunshots but not thunder. Some dogs who are terrified of gunshots but not thunder. Some dogs who are afraid of everything, including the click of the television when you turn it on.
Yeah.
So it's hard to know exactly why
What's
he's so
on.
Noise sensitive. But if you haven't checked this picture out, this dog is not just sort of like slightly up a tree.
This dog is
an arborist. This dog is way up a tree.
Yeah, that's
presumably he got down from the tree.
Apparently, he climbs up the trees all the time. So.
Holy moly.
Oh, that's pretty cool. So, yeah, go to my Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show and you can find that. We had an email from Sue. As a Shih Tzu, 15 years old. Now deaf, cataracts so bad that his vision is limited. When we try to play with him and throw a toy, he has a hard time finding it because he doesn't hear it fall and he can't see where it went. An eye specialist that we saw said too old to withstand surgery for his eyes.
Aww.
Any ideas for working with an elderly pet?
Yeah. One is to keep in mind that geriatric pets are very much like people in that very often their interests change. So you may want to throw a toy for him, but he can't see it and he can't hear it land. But he may not care. I mean, he may not want to play like that anymore. You know, he may want belly rubs. I want belly rubs. I want to lie on the couch and I want belly rubs. That's what I want to do. He certainly needs exercise still. But one of the keys with geriatric pets is to acknowledge, and it sort of sounds obvious, but I think it's still really helpful when it's your dog. You know, it's so easy to be locked into the habits that you have with your dog. So to acknowledge that they really are older and that it's really okay, even though they need some exercise, of course they do, but it's okay if they lie around on the couch way more than they used to. Now, I don't know. It might be that your dog likes to play. I think what I do is the nose is usually the last to go. So I play nose games. You know, we're talking about nose games earlier. I play nose games with this dog. I teach him to sniff out things you've hidden. It's not that hard to do. Take some little tasty, really, really, really odoriferous, wonderful, stinky little crate thing. Put it inside of a little hollow toy. And you could use anything or just smear it on something. And then just put it like a foot away. And then just put the main food right by the dog's nose. And then sort of lure it to the actual thing that you, quote, hidden. It's a foot away, but he can't see, right? So he walks a foot and then finds the mother load of all the food. While he does that, once you get established, put a cue on it. Find it. And then you can teach him a find-it game where you go sniff around the house. Doesn't matter that you can't see or hear. You can sniff around the house and find the little piece of, I don't know,
whatever
liver that you've hidden, right? That'd be a great game with an older dog.
Patricia McConnell, Certified Applied Animal Behaviorist, our guest. And hey, I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.
Friday morning at 9, we're introduced to the emotional life of the brain with our guest, Richie Davidson, who tells us how we can help change the mold on the brains we've been given. And at 10 o'clock, historian Lucy Worsley reveals the secret life of the home. I'm Veronica Rickert. Join me Friday morning from 9 to 11 on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.
Contributors to Wisconsin Public Radio include Rockweiler Insulation, a family-owned business committed to providing comfortable environments, energy savings, and customer satisfaction. Information on the web at rockweilerinsulation.com.
Thanks for listening in here on the Ideas Network. Patricia McConnell, my guest today. I'm Larry Mueller. We're talking about animal behavior and certainly answering your questions. Are you dealing with a behavior problem or just wonder what to do? Have you or a trainer used positive reinforcement with your pet? Was it successful? Give us a call, 1-800-642-1234. Go to my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. You can post there as well. And Jeanette in La Crosse has been waiting a long time. Jeanette, thank you for waiting. Hello.
Hi. I have a question for you. I was wondering, we have a 15-year-old Yorkie, and we take her for walks, and she befriended a little Chihuahua Rat Terrier cross. And long story short, we started walking this dog along with her, and now we're pretty much grandma and grandpa of this little dog. And she lives with us about 90% of the time, and every once in a while she'll go back and spend a night with the previous owner. They just don't have the time to walk her. But she really loves being with us a lot. And we have a doggy door, and she's completely trained to go outside and poop and pee in the yard, but there's this one room that she wants to go in still and pee and poop in, and so we have to keep it closed off. So that's part one of the question. The other part of my question to you is, it seems like they get along fine, except there's something about the bed when with this little Chihuahua Rat Terrier cross, she's real submissive to our dog, but when she's in bed and is under the covers, our dog comes anywhere near her on the bed, she gets real aggressive and growls and it snaps. So what do you think is going on there?
Well, a couple of things. And you know, it's when tiny little dogs like that get so toothy and growly and we shouldn't. It's important to take it seriously because even though smaller teeth can do a lot of damage, mm-hmm. but I have to admit, it's sort of funny.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, come on. You know, I just work with a Rottweiler crossed with a, you know, 120-pound Dogo Argentino. Come on. You're just little. Anyway, but your other dog is little too. So, you know, it's pretty serious to them. So a couple of things. Quickly going back to the room in your house that's the bathroom. That's usually about smell. So you're great to keep the door closed. I would continue to do that. But first thing I would do when the dogs are out of there, I would do everything I could to make sure there's no smell there, because that's what gets a dog to go in a particular place. Is there's even if they went there first, they had a, quote, accident. But now if it hasn't been cleaned up in a way that has eliminated all the urine odors, then they're going to basically, in their mind, say, well, this is where the bathroom is, because they use scent like we use vision. We look for the restroom sign, the white toilet, right? So make sure you've used really good enzymatic cleaners. You can get black lights to see if there's signs of urine there. But work really, really hard to make sure that you've actually really, truly cleaned up the smell. It's not about the stain. Soap and detergent usually makes it worse, not better. So use a commercial enzymatic product to neutralize the smell of urine or feces, either one. Urine's harder than feces to get out. So then when you're there, you're going to open up that room just for very brief periods of time, and you're going to feed the dog in there. Let the dog eat there, because usually dogs don't want to go to the bathroom where they eat. So that's where the dog's going to eat, and then when he's done eating, then you leave the room, you shut the door again. So you're going to prevent all possible accidents. You're basically creating a new habit. You can go in that room with the dogs, and you sit down, hang out, play with them, sit down, read a novel for a while, spend some time in there, keep one eye on the dog to make sure it doesn't potty. If it does, you do a really quick startle kind of, you know, clap or ah, and then take it outside quickly. But basically your idea is to redefine what that room is. Dog thinks it's a bathroom, you want it to be a bedroom or whatever it is. So about the bed, well, there's one easy piece of advice, which is never any fun to some people, is don't let your guest or your 90% new dog, don't let that dog up on the bed. And that's never what anybody wants to hear, but certainly that's, you know, it's the easiest.
That's the easiest way.
It's the easiest. It's like when I actually told a physician once, I said, you know, it only hurts when I walk up the hill backwards. Which I have a reason for. If you have herding dogs and you're training a new dog, you actually have to do that. But he looked at me like I was an alien from space and said, well, you could just not walk up the hill backwards. I thought I was crazy. But I need to walk up the hill backwards. Anyway, so that is the easiest thing to do.
Well, she's such a snuggle bug.
I know. I said it was hard. But, you know, this is really hard on your other dog, right?
Well, yeah. Now she doesn't want to be on the bed at all.
Exactly. So the interloper has taken over the bed. And you know what? That's not fair. So one thing I would suggest is getting a really cozy, wonderful, best plush, little cute, little adorable dog bed that's right beside your bed. You're going to teach the little visitor, sort of, to sleep there. I would have both dogs sleep off the bed for a little bit. Usually have to use a little leash. Make sure they can't hurt themselves. Make sure they can't jump over something and hang themselves. Be sure it's really, really safe. But you're going to leash them to this area. Put treats in their bed. Teach them every night. You're going to come in here. You're going to sleep in this nice little bed. And usually the first two nights are not fun. I'll just tell you, pick a weekend, you know, if you're not working. And then by night three, they often get used to it. And they're like, okay, we're fine down there. So I know that's not the perfect solution, but frankly, sometimes it's the best, at least for a while, until you can get some other things dealt with in terms of their relationship.
There you go.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks a lot for calling, Jeanette. And Heather in Brookfield, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi, I have a question that was answered a little, radios or callers before me. But I have an older dog, so my dog. We are in Brookfield, so we're not allowed to have fence. It's not a fence in the area.
Okay.
In the suburbs, so we can't have fences. She's 6 years old, and we'll let her go outside. We adopted her when she was four from Milwaukee, so now and from the Humane Society.
Great.
She's a German Shepherd Beagle mix. So, yeah, kind of an odd.
What an odd.
So my question is, pretty much normally she will come.
All right.
When we call and let her out, she'll come. But, again, you have that other percentage of the time she does not call. Our question is positive reinforcements versus negative reinforcements. Because once she does come, that's what we want, but we also don't want her running from,
right.
We want her to come the first time.
Yeah, no, it's you're sort of in a tough spot because say you call them to come and they don't come. And then they finally come 10 minutes later, you absolutely have to make a big deal of it. You actually have to be like, good dog, that's really good, good dog, I'm so glad I could just kill you. I hate somebody could have recorded this at one point in my life at the farm. They could have recorded me saying, I hate every hair on your little head. Here, have a piece of chicken. Because I was so angry. So it's not always the easiest thing to do, but you absolutely cannot punish them. You cannot make it aversive for them to come to you. The problem is is 10 minutes ago when they didn't come in the first place. One of the things you can do is going back to what I mentioned to that earlier caller, write down. Be as specific as you can. That's what a professional trainer would do. When is it working? When is it not working? How predictable is it? Is it because it happens when there's a dog two doors down? Is it happens when there's a squirrel outside? Does it tend to happen more in the evening, in the morning? And then that's what you start working on your training program. So you're going to start trying to figure out where the weak link in the chain is and direct your energy towards that. So say you determine that it's
usually probably a dog. It's probably another animal. If there's a dog, she loses her head. She's not very, we call her not antisocial. She's very attracted to them.
Yeah.
But then she just barks, and then you can't, reason with her to get her to come back. Even when we take her for a walk on a leash, if she sees another dog, she pulls towards
that dog. She gets all excited. So can she play with these other dogs?
Supposedly she can when we take her to doggy daycare.
Well, I mean in the backyard. In the backyard.
She can. She'll go over to them because, again, it's not a fence. None of the houses could be fenced in. So she'll go over there and she'll try to, she'll sniff and interact with them. But then ones that are right next to us, she knows they're there and has no interest in them.
Okay.
So
as long as there's no problem between the dogs, going back to what Larry and I were talking about earlier about positive reinforcement helping you know your dog, if what she really wants is to go greet the other dog, that, ironically, could be a reinforcement for coming. So you take her outside. Maybe you have her on a long line, or maybe not, but you've got great food. I don't mean kibble. I mean great food, like cooked up beef and liver or something incredibly wonderful. And she just, you got to catch it right away before she starts to run. She looks to the left, and there's another dog there. And you instantly call her to come. She's right beside you. You back up one foot, and bang, you give her treat, treat, treat. She's like, oh. And then you say, okay, and let her run to that other dog. Because if that's what she really wants, you can use that as a powerful reinforcement.
Yeah.
The trick is to do, there are two things that are the trick. And exactly how to do this, I would have to come to you and spend an hour or so with you. But the keys are start before she starts to run away. Start teaching her when she's just mildly distracted by something in another yard, whether it's a squirrel or another dog, she's just looked up. Start teaching that because you need to get her before she starts to run away. Gradually sort of work your way up. And the second thing is teach a stop command. It's very hard to get a dog to come when you call if it's running away from you because first they have to stop. So you're asking them to do two or three, they have to stop and then turn around and then come to you. You're asking them to do two things in between what they're doing and what you want. So teach a stop command. I say, whoa, or lie down is for my border collie.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to teach that too. You're really close. You say, whoa, And they sort of look at you like, what? And then you give them a treat, move it the other way. And so teach them to stop even when they're in front of you,
okay,
moving
so
away from you.
You're not actually using the word stop, though, because that's what we'll do. We'll say stop, but that's probably not. So you're saying use something else.
Well, you have to teach. Well, it's great to use stop, but you have to only use it if it works. If your dog has learned that when you say stop, you can just keep running, and there's no reason to stop, then don't use that. Use it. Start with a different word, but you have to train it. You can't just say it and hope that saying it louder. And that's what we do, right?
It's like, say
stop,
it louder.
Stop, right? That all you're doing is teaching her to ignore that noise. So teach it like you're teaching a trick. Teach it like a circus trick. Stop. Good girl. Good girl. Very good girl. Give her a treat. Stop. Good girl, good girl. Treat, give her a treat. You got to train it like a cue, just like anything else.
Okay.
Make sense?
Yes.
I want to come. Where are you? I want to come help you. Good luck, good luck.
Thank you very much.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Robin in Lake Delton has a couple of cats that drool when they get near her or him, but not always, but quite often. I don't have any cat treats. Both have been female. One was the feral, the other not. Neither had dental issues. Why do they drool around me?
I have absolutely no idea. I am gobsmacked, as they say. Which actually would be an appropriate term, considering we're talking about drool here, right?
Well, let's see. I'm trying to think.
So let's all hypothesize.
Maybe you
don't have food on you, because normally drooling, as we know, it's usually either a response to food, right? Salivation.
Yeah.
Can also be a sign of extreme fear or anxiety. I'm not thinking, you know, this is an email, so I can't ask her, but I'm not thinking that these cats were necessarily terrified of her. Now, the feral one could have been.
Yeah.
One cat was feral, the other was not.
My take. They're extremely afraid of her, and she's the one that feeds them.
Ah, so they're ambivalent. It's both. They're torn.
Patricia McConnell will be with us right up until 12:30 today here on the Ideas Network. Nothing brings more joy than good behavior or more frustration when acting up comes into play. You might think I'm talking about kids, but actually I'm referring to pets. Larry Mueller here. Great to have you along today on the Ideas Network. We are talking today with certified applied animal behaviorist Patricia McConnell, with us to tell us how positive reinforcement works. We'll talk with her about what you can do as an owner, what type of behavior you can help to improve. We'll also see if the same advice holds true for cats as it does for dogs. And join in with your questions or comments. I hope you will. The number is 1-800-642-1234. You can also leave a question, a comment, or a photo of your pet on our Facebook page. Just go to the Larry Mueller Show for that. And if you click like while you're there, we'll send you regular updates on upcoming show topics. And we'll be back with Patricia right after the news. Well, it seems like we never get tired of talking about our pets and how they behave can make us proud and happy pet owners, or have us ready to pull out our hair. We're lucky to have with us today certified applied animal behaviorist Patricia McConnell as a friend of the show. She's also a dog trainer and author of several books. Her latest is Love Has No Age Limit, Welcoming an Adopted Dog into Your Home. Tricia, always a pleasure.
Always a pleasure for me.
Really great to have you with us. And we have so many people online and so many people who are emailing in. I think we just go right to the phones. What do you think?
Sure.
Let's go to the phones. And Carolyn Madison, thanks for calling. Hi.
Hi. I'm calling about my schnauzer, who you might guess has a barking problem.
What, a schnauzer? I'm shocked. Sorry.
I heard you say about the speaking to the dog is actually reinforcing the barking. And, of course, we've done that. We have said quiet, be quiet. Sometimes if I say it before he starts, he doesn't bark. Always, after someone has, he's barked at someone, they've come into our home onto our property in our backyard, he just settles right down and he's very happy to be around people. He doesn't bark once we're all established that we're friendly, we're together, we're having a conversation.
Good.
So it's just when, for example, someone walks by the front of our house. We are inner city Madison, so we're right on the sidewalk. If someone walks by, if someone comes to our door, if the neighbor comes out of their house, we get this barking. And, of course, we always say, quiet, and it sounds like we're reinforcing his problem. He is 8 years old, and I don't know if that...
No, it's good to know. It's good to know. But eight-year-olds, you know, they're not like puppies, but they can learn a lot, too. You know, I was 30 when I went back to school, university here as a freshman, and I learned something, I think, anyway. So there's nothing wrong with saying quiet if you've trained him using positive reinforcement to do a particular thing when you say quiet. So one of the tricks with quiet, I use that's enough, but one of the tricks with that is it's hard to convey the concept of don't do something. You know, a negative is harder than a positive. So if I say don't think about red, what do you think about? Red, right? Mm-hmm. So it's harder to convey if you do not do something, I will reinforce you. So what quiet should mean, and you'll need to teach this like a circus trick, what quiet should mean is turn away from where you are, like me, you're barking out the window, and come to me and do something else. You know, come to me and sit down. Turn away from the window and come over to me and pick up a toy. Come, turn away from the window, stop barking, come over to me. So make sure that quiet doesn't just mean stop barking. Make sure you've taught the dog that quiet means do something else. If it can be incompatible with barking, like picking up a toy in their mouth, that would be even better. You could do that with some dogs, especially if they're real play and object-oriented. That would work really well with other dogs. It's like, what? I don't care. So you just teach them to come over to you and lie down or something. So that's one thing you can do. There's also a method. It's also a positive reinforcement method. And it's sort of, it's different than a concept we usually have. It's basically you're reinforcing the dog for X amount of time of not barking. I just spoke at a behavior analyst conference talking about dogs and special needs children and was reading about an autistic child who had a behavioral problem around the dog. They tried different methods of changing it. And what they found most successful was taking a reinforcement that they knew the child loved. They actually got to pick the reinforcement, right, sort of each day. The dog, you can just pick whatever you know your dog is crazed to get, and usually it's food. Sometimes it's play. And then you're basically going to give him a treat for not barking for X amount of time. So basically, if you do not do the problem behavior at X amount of time, you're going to get a treat. So you're going to have to start this when you have control over what he might be barking at. So you might have a friend just walk in the view of the window and then just stand there. And if he can see that person and go for 1 second without barking, then he'll get a treat. And then gradually it'll be 2 seconds and 3 seconds and 4 seconds. That might be a method you want to get a behaviorist to come help you with. You might want to just do, I mean, that would be ideal, but you'd certainly want to teach him that, enough or quiet means something rather than stop doing something. It means start doing something. Does that make sense?
Okay. So, if he starts to bark, I should say enough and then bring him to me, make him sit and give him a treat.
You need to start where he can't lose. So if you just say quiet while he's barking and hope that he'll turn away from the window and come to you and sit, and right, we're going to all be here a long time, right?
Okay.
So you want to set a situation up where he may be likely to bark, you know, and so set it up, script it out like a play. You have somebody come to the door and they knock just once. One knock, not knock, 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 just one little knock, and then they quit. You go to the door with a piece of liver, pull him away from the door, and as you get to him, you say, quiet, and then you pull him away from the door, and then you give him a treat. So you're going to start teaching him in a situation in which he can win. Don't set yourself up to fail. This is the most common problem that people have often with this kind of, we're trying to stop a behavior using positive reinforcement. They'll wait until the dog is unable to focus, right? You know, it's too much to expect them to be able to concentrate. They're too distracted. They're too excited. And then say whatever, and then the dog doesn't do it, and they say, well, I tried positive reinforcement, it doesn't work. You have to set him up so that he's not lost in barking. You know, it's easy. He's barely started, or he hasn't even started yet. So go slow, take tiny little baby steps, half a second by half a second. Okay?
There you go.
Okay, I'll give it a try. Thanks.
Okay, good luck. And don't hesitate to bring a trainer in. You know, it's a lot of people are resistant to that. Oh, if I was a good person, my dog would do whatever I say. And, you know, if you don't hesitate to take your dog to a mechanic, don't hesitate to bring a really good trainer in to just be a coach, even just for one little session to be a coach for you.
Thanks for calling. David in Alabama, it's your turn. Hi, David. Thank you for calling.
Hey, how are you today?
Great. Appreciate your call.
Yes, sir. We had two golden retrievers, Jingle, a four-year-old, and Belle, who was 11. And we just lost Belle this summer. She passed away. So now Jingle, the four-year-old, has her behavior has changed a little bit. She's obviously she's being affected by the death of her close companion. She's very lethargic. You know, so we're trying to decide. I mean, I'm sure she's in mourning, but we're trying to decide what the best way to handle this is. You know, we've considered adopting a rescue dog, another golden, or either letting her have puppies and possibly keeping one, but we don't want to do the wrong thing, and maybe there's a better way to get her through this time as well.
Sure. I'm really glad you're asking this. I'm sorry that you have to be asking it, but I'm glad you're asking it because it's a common problem. I'm actually had a client who contacted me just a few days ago who has the exact same problem. She actually lost two dogs in a very brief period of time within 1 month, and the third dog is you know, both of them are in profound grief right now. So I'm actually going to write a blog tomorrow about this topic. It's The Other End of the Leash. You might want to check that out. And if those of you who have been through this, it would be great if you would also comment about what you've learned and what helped your dog. So here's some generic things not knowing your dog better. One, definitely don't have a litter. Have her have a litter anyway. There's so many issues related to that, sort of the biggest of which, what's going to happen to all those puppies? You know, unless you are in a situation in which you can take responsibility for each of those puppies for the rest of their life, which could be another 17 years, then you don't want to have a litter. So I would pass on that. I think getting a second dog, especially if a dog has been around another dog almost all of their life and she likes other dogs, not just the one dog who died, but she likes other dogs, is a great idea. That might be you get a puppy from somebody or you get a young rescue dog. Is your four-year-old before the death of Belle, was Jingles, Jingle, was she playful?
She was. Now, Belle was never very playful, but we walk them every day and we have a lot of, there's a part of our neighborhood where we can take her off the leash and
Great.
She plays with other dogs in the neighborhood. And so, yeah, she's very social and gets along well with
her. Oh, that's great. So I would get, if you want two dogs, it always should be you first because you're going to have to take care of them. Jingle is not going to take them to the vet. So if you like the idea of two dogs, going back to having two dogs, definitely get a young dog for her. Get a young one, a male. It's often a better choice than having two females. It's perfectly fine to have two females in lots and lots of circumstances, but the probability is better that there won't be tension, conflict between a male and a female. So look for a sweet, goofy, friendly, young, playful male who you guys like, who she likes, who fits into the household. So that's one thing to do. But just generically, not everybody can get another dog. You know, you're just not in that situation. Sounds like she's been grieving a long time.
Yeah.
One of the things that I've found helpful with some of my clients' dogs is to do new things. You know, so, you know how novelty can sort of give you a little boost? There's a real biological, psychological phenomenon that novelty can add energy, can stimulate you. So try and get her out of a routine. Do some things you've never done before as long as you think they'd be fun for her. Take her on walks she's never been on. Teach her tricks she's never done before. Maybe do some nose work with her. Nose work, letting a dog use their nose can be incredibly helpful for dogs to just sort of center themselves. She likes long walks where she's relatively free. If you could do that safely, if not, then have a long line. That's very good for dogs. That kind of exercise, walk, 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 trot, 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 that movement of alternate sides of their body actually turns out physiologically to be really helpful. So those are some tips that might help her as well.
Mm-hmm. Good luck.
Thank you very much. Y'all have a great day.
Yeah,
you
too.
Too. Good luck.
Ken in Milwaukee, hi to you.
Hi. Part of a question that I had might have been just answered a little bit. We have a 10-month-old Keyshawn, that just barks incessantly at certain times. Some of it's outside, and I think that the explanation that you gave as far as to the other caller as far as the grabbing the attention, that'll work for that. But he tends to bark a lot when he wants something from us, particularly in the kitchen.
Right.
And it's a rapid fire, high, annoying bark. And it's like you said, I don't know how to stop a behavior like this. We have been advised to use a spray bottle of bitter apple and water, two shots in the mouth. It worked for a while, but we're getting a fearful dog.
Yeah, you don't want. Yeah,
don't like
you
really
don't want
like
that.
Yeah, no, we really don't.
And it's and boy, do I understand though, because that high pitch. I've heard some dogs who. Luckily, I haven't had one. Although I did Tootsie, my little cavalier from a puppy mill that I got last October. She barked constantly. She barked to get out of her crate. She barked to get me up in the morning. She barked when she wants food. So.
And especially since we used to have chows who are very quiet.
Very quiet. And Keys hounds are not known to be quiet. But that high-pitched bark, Larry, there are times it's like, oh, it's just gets a startle.
Grating.
It's like fingernails on a chalkboard sometimes. So,
yeah.
So here's a couple things you can try. One, you can try something that's called actually negative punishment. And the negative is that you take something away. The punishment is that you're going to decrease a behavior. Right? That's what punishment is. Punishment is something that decreases a behavior, if that term is used correctly. So you want to decrease the behavior. So one thing to take away is you in the kitchen by the counter where the dog food is. So one thing you could do, I would try this for 3 days, and I would carefully keep track of whether you think it's being effective or not. If it doesn't work, and when I say work, I should be more specific. If it doesn't improve things, if you don't see some improvement in 3 days, I would drop it and try another method. And that, by the way, that's a key for everybody, for everything. If you're trying a particular method and you know you're doing it right, which is often not true,
right.
But if you're sure, absolutely sure, and you are correct that you are doing it right, and you've tried it for 3 days multiple times and it's not improving anything at all, switch. Switch. Try something else. So try this for 3 days. You're going to do negative punishment, and every time she barks, you're going to walk out of the kitchen. Oh, too bad. I guess I wasn't going
to... It's not just turning our backs on her.
No, I'd leave the whole kitchen.
Okay.
I'd just walk out of the kitchen. I'd sit down. Sorry. I'm not really going to feed you now. And then the trick is if you go in the kitchen, she is quiet, man. You maybe have her dinner ready, you know, and you just whip it out. Like, good girl, you were quiet. Here's your dinner. Does she do it when you're preparing food as well?
Yes, absolutely. That's more of what she
does. It's more commonly when you're in the kitchen cooking something for you.
Right.
And do you ever give her food?
Not ours, no.
Never, ever, ever?
No, usually not.
Okay.
I mean, the only thing that we'll do is for sometimes if we drain a tuna fish can, we'll put it in a separate bowl and put it by her her food.
Here's one of the downsides of positive reinforcement: is it works best if you do it intermittently. So if it's a great, great reinforcer and that like it's tuna juice. And it only happens once every 100 times you're in the kitchen, it's still going to work. It's the great thing about positive reinforcement. It's a problem with positive reinforcement. So I'm not saying that's the cause of it, but from now on, never, ever, 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 she never gets food under those circumstances, okay? So if she's barking, she never, ever gets food. Doesn't happen.
Oh, no. We never give it to her when she does.
Oh, okay.
Never,
well, good for
ever,
you.
Never. No.
Good for
ever,
you.
No.
Good for
no.
you. That's great. And I would basically, you could, you know, if you ever do want to give her food, again, like the tuna, ask her to do something. So sit, lie down, you know, ask her to do something, which you might do. So the barking in the kitchen. So one, you could just leave the kitchen. You could ask her to lie down. You could teach her to, here's an easy one. There are like 27 things you can do, and my brain is sort of like doing this little riff on what is easiest. The easiest thing to do would be to teach her when you're preparing your dinner, she gets to go eat food out of a stuffed Kong in the living room. So you could basically you're not teaching her to stop barking. You're giving you're in training a habit that's incompatible. So you get to go into the living room and chew on your Kong, and then I'm going to go in the kitchen and I'm going to make my dinner. So that could help a lot. It's sort of a finesse, but that could help a lot.
Why not?
So yeah, I would.
I think that's part of what started this stuff. That we did put stuff in the Kong, like peanut butter, which she flips over. And as soon as we, you know, if the kids start making a peanut butter jelly sandwich, she's going berserk. So
she smells that peanut butter.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Or something like that. And you know, since we put things in the Kong like that, that she really loves.
Yeah.
That's when this all started, so.
Yeah. No, I hear you. I wish we had more time. I know we're running out of time. And so in a way, that particular method sort of ended up reinforcing her because she associated the peanut butter. The kids make peanut butter and I get peanut butter. So I can see that being a reinforcer. So I need to come to your house. Can I come to your house?
Yeah, sure.
This is a tricky one. Here's another simple thing you could do is every time she starts to bark at you in the kitchen, just put her in a crate. You're not mad. It's just a consequence. And so that's positive punishment. You'd be like, oh, too bad. You're barking. Go in your crate. Put her in the crate. Shut the door. And she could bark, but la, 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 la. You don't hear anything, right? And she might learn that, oh, I don't want to bark because that results in me going somewhere else.
Mm-hmm. Good luck.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
This particular dog is obviously too smart. When people say my dog is so smart, I usually say, I'm so sorry.
It's a bad thing.
I'm sorry.
Marge in Green Bay, hi.
Good afternoon. How are you guys? Thank you so much for taking my call.
Sure. What's on your mind?
My daughter has a 5-year-old part Siamese boy cat, and he likes clothing.
He likes to eat.
And does he eat it? Does he actually ingest it?
Oh, yes, dear, yeah. He does. She has been told that this is called pica.
It's a version of it. Yeah, pica basically means eating anything that's not food.
Well, that might be true, because I've gone over there, taken my jacket off, hung it on the back of a chair. Next thing you know, he's standing there chewing on the string of my jacket.
Yeah, this is a tricky one. This is
so actually, is there ever going to be a time when he won't chew anything?
Well, he's not necessarily going to just grow out of it. How old is the cat?
He's 5.
Yeah, so this is, so unless you do something, probably not. And this is a serious problem, and we don't understand it. There's actually been a lot of email between my colleagues, certified applied animal behaviorists, about a particularly difficult case about a cat who's a clothing eater, basically a fabric eater. And so we don't understand it. It's more common in Siamese, remarkably so. There appears to be a genetic component because of the fact that we see it in some breeds much more than others. There appears that basically, if it's an extreme case, well, if it's a mild to moderate case, sometimes you can use behavioral changes. You can use operant conditioning to redirect the cat onto something else. So you can get his attention, say he starts to chew on your jacket. Just as he starts to do that, you make a noise, you get his attention, you draw him away, and you get him doing something else. Probably something that also engages his mouth. Because you always want to fight fire with fire. So you want to do something with your mouth? I'll give you something appropriate with your mouth. So you have a toy on a fishing pole kind of arrangement. You've got a catnip stuffed toy, and you get him sort of playing and biting appropriately on something else. That if it's a mild case and you can sort of continually redirect him and then manage it other times by preventing it as much as you can. So when you're gone, there's no fabric for the cat to eat, which is not always easy.
No.
So in mild to moderate cases, that can work. In more severe cases, you really have to look at internal physiology. This is a kind of case that I would instantly want to do a collaboration with a veterinary behaviorist. You can look for one close to you, the American Veterinary Society of Animal Behavior, AVSAB, A-V-S-A-B. Go right online and see if you can find a practitioner near you. Have your vet ask and see, because you might want to be thinking about some kind of psychopharmacology.
There you go. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. And Patricia, I want to just go back and mention, you mentioned your blog, which I think is really cool. And tell people again about it.
Yeah, thanks, Larry. It's the other end of the leash. And it's really fun. There, I think 22,000-24,000 readers now from all around the world. It's an inquiry about behavior and relationships between people and dogs, but it's not always dogs. I just talked a lot about the cats, the little kittens mm-hmm. that were born in my barn. So we love people to join that. It's a wonderful discussion. And I'm going to be doing a series of fundraisers for shelters around the area that I'm really excited about, evening talks. And if you just go on my website, patriciamcconnell.com, you can see that I'll be in Cooley, La Crosse, Cooley Region Humane Society, September 19th, Fox Valley, September 28th, whole bunch more dates, Milwaukee, Chicago, it's coming up soon, so you can. Jen, I'm forgetting the dates on those, but so you can go to the website like I will to remember to show up on time.
And you can go to my Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show, and you can find a direct link to Patricia's. And Patricia, thank you so much. Always a pleasure.
Always a pleasure, Larry.
Well, we'll look forward. I hope you'll come back.
Well, I'll think about it.
Okay. But I bet she does. Patricia McConnell, certified applied animal behaviorist, author. Great to have her along. Thank you for listening, and stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network.